I do think that we need to have a little bit of an overhaul within the business community to really understand what we consider to be important, how we prioritize that, and if we're going to have smaller organizations within our overall ecosystem, we need to be just sparing a bit of a thought for how they might be keeping up with such a fast pace of change and how we're going to support them in continuing to meet some of the standards and bars that we're setting so that everybody benefits, frankly.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today's episode is the first of two conversations with Steve around the coming impact of technological development on society and business. We know that new technologies have always tested organizations, and technological innovation and integration into our lives and enterprises, it's only accelerating. Steve, you and I haven't been in conversation for a while, so it's really great to be back behind the mic with you. Thank you so much for coming today.
No, you're right. We haven't had a conversation for a while, have we? So it's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's jump right into what impact accelerating technological innovations pose. Timing is always so tricky because if you adopt new tech too early, you're likely to hit implementation challenges that could diminish the return on investment. And if you implement too late, you're missing out on the opportunity to capitalize on the investment at all. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is, you know, and I think if we look at it from that whole sort of security perspective, then, you know, therein lies some of the challenges, because we do need to be able to, I think, adapt much more quickly in the security space. I think from a technology standpoint, you know, if you're a CTO or CIO, you're probably used to having to move a little bit more of an agile fashion. Mm-hmm. Security, and, you know, some people may disagree with me, but I think has always lagged a little bit for a variety of reasons, you know, not least of which it hasn't been considered by most organizations to be as important as it actually should be. Mm. So we're still playing that sort of game of catch up, I think, in the security space. But, you know, technology change, innovation, I mean, increasingly, if you look at the way in which that's being driven now, it is all around AI. Everybody talks about AI. There's a little bit of
obsession.
Certainly obsession, but I was going to say that boardrooms are beginning to fall out of love with it. Huh. You know, they've sort of got interested in the hype.
Right.
And, you know, speaking from personal experience, because we've got a number of different AI programs running at the ISF, you've got to stick with the program. In our case, we've got a three-year program running. We have finished year one. We are starting to see really good signs of potential. And it's just taking a little bit longer than anticipated. So I think, you know, when we talk about technological change, technological innovation, speed, return on investment, we just need to, I think, be tempering it slightly and probably need to be a little bit more realistic, not get ahead of ourselves, because I think that otherwise you do tend to get a little bit disappointed.
Yeah. With companies that are trying to keep up with those accelerating technologies and the enterprises that are at the forefront of integrating them, it seems like a major issue is that security risks are already becoming a low priority when there's so much competition and it's such a fiercely contested landscape.
Yeah, I think that's always been one of the challenges, isn't it? You know, where does security fit in that sort of priority stack? And there are some, you know, good examples of organizations that have really elevated it to being a top priority. It tended to be in the financial services space because that's where these things tend to happen. But I think it is changing. I think that as, you know, people begin to understand that security does have the potential to deliver something of a competitive advantage, mm-hmm. then it is moving up, as I say, in that priority stack. And I think that's only a good thing. But yeah, it's always going to be, I think, a bit of a poor relation. And that is because there is so much else that is hitting organizations. You know, if you just think about, for instance, legacy systems, you know, mm-hmm. we're still talking about legacy systems and replacing those in very many organizations. COVID didn't help. COVID didn't help much at all, actually. But from a business standpoint, from getting some of these things done, there is, again, you know, I'm back to that frustration point about chief executives that I talk to, that we don't understand why technology can't be implemented more quickly. And of course, from the technology side, the response is, well, they don't understand why they can't have the resources that they claim to need in order to implement so quickly. Right. So I think that it's about this balancing out of what's important from the business perspective, understanding better, I think, the relevance of some of the security-based risks and therefore implementations in relation to where the business is going. And then, of course, you have to keep an eye to the future. You know, we've just touched on the issue of AI. We have to consider, again, things like large-scale quantum, which, isn't there yet, but it has the potential to absolutely bring some companies anyway crashing down in the future. Because just a very simple example, if you look at encryption, then, you know, quantum is going to render so many existing encryption systems ineffective. And that could have such a big effect on some of the other systems that underpin so much of modern business. So I think it's impossible really to divorce security from technology, from business. And we shouldn't underestimate that. It's easy for me to say, exceptionally difficult to implement and to maintain implementation.
Right. Well, and you've been saying it for years. It may be in the context of new technologies, but it's the same thing that I've heard you say for years. So, and I remember in your conversation with Konstantinos Karagiannis earlier this year, when he mentioned that bad actors have already been collecting data packets that are currently considered secure, so that once that quantum computing power is available, they can use that power to crack open those packets, access things like trade secrets, even national security information. Quantum is a game changer.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, that's really what we're talking about here. Organizations could certainly find themselves cut off from this supercharged processing power because it may be developed by a government for its own ends and restricted, expensive, all of those sorts of things, so that it effectively becomes unavailable. And I think, you know, organizations, despite all of that, are going to have to operate in the shadow of this massive computing power shift when it comes about. As the pace of change accelerates, innovations proliferate, traditional life cycles of technology shorten. For me, that's a good thing, by the way. I like it to shorten, as long as it's easy to implement. And, you know, plans that organizations have to replace, update hardware may have to change. It may well be that what you thought you were going to do is actually obsolete before you've even implemented it. So I suppose what I'm starting to do here, of course, is to wave a bit of a flag for getting closer to some of the vendors that are out there to try to understand where they're going in terms of their future direction. And of course, you know, large organizations are already doing that. So people will be sort of listening to this, you know, nodding wisely saying, well, we're doing that, Steve, so what's new? But again, to bring out one of my other old chestnuts, it isn't just about the big organizations. It's about the little ones who are in the supply chain. You know, they're not going to be able to keep pace. And that's a very real concern of mine, that we're not doing enough to support smaller organizations keeping up with the speed of technological change, keeping up with the way in which the security space has been morphing and changing. And to the point you were just making, we do know, as Konstantinos was saying, you know, that bad actors have already stolen data. You only need to subscribe to someone like Experian, and you will be getting notifications on a relatively regular basis about the fact that they've discovered that your email address is out there and so on. So I do think that we need to have a little bit of an overhaul within the business community to really understand what we consider to be important, how we prioritize that, and if we're going to have smaller organizations within our overall ecosystem, we need to be just sparing a bit of a thought for how they might be keeping up with such a fast pace of change and how we're going to support them in continuing to meet some of the standards and bars that we're setting so that everybody benefits, frankly.
So this is maybe more of a change. I'm recognizing this is more of a change that organizations could find themselves burdened with more and more legacy technology, and then increasing technical debt, applications, hardware that may just be a couple years old. How can leaders handle that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Big question. And I think it's going to leave organizations stretched in a couple of ways, you know. there's going to be this growing demand to keep up, push ahead, embrace new technology and ideas, always going to be there. But at the same time, there's similar pressure to do something about this growing pile of legacy technology that, frankly, we've been talking about now for years.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, some people may disagree with me. I'd love to hear from them if they do. But I do think that some organizations will be making calls again to just push off the day when they replace the legacy technology. Can we get another couple of years out of it? You know, right. Could we patch it up again? Because shouldn't we be waiting for the day when whatever it is comes along?
We're done.
And of course, you know, both of those situations being stretched and pushing off changing out legacy technology, they're both going to contribute to the attack surface that organizations present to the world.
Right. I mean, I said the day we're done sort of facetiously, because this isn't going to end anytime soon. Organizations that are waiting for the day, they're waiting for nothing. This must be dealt with, it seems.
Yeah, but also, you know, Tavia, there's, again, if I look at it with my sort of CEO hat on at the moment, there are so many priorities that CEOs are having to deal with today. We've got this relentless increase in the amount of regulation that our teams have to get their heads around, particularly when you operate in a, you know, across multiple geographies.
Right.
Just keeping up with that shouldn't be underestimated. And then you've got this relentless push to try to deliver on shareholder expectation, employees' expectation, continue to push through in terms of strategic development at a time when we've probably not seen such volatility in the markets around the world for very many years. I mean, I sometimes try to, you know, think back to the last time I saw such a volatile market. It's a very, very long while ago. And that's the world of the security leader today. To be relevant, he or she needs to be understanding all of those things to get the ear of the business. It's exceptionally difficult. And I think that, it's one of those things that we probably just have to adapt to, but adaptation doesn't happen overnight.
Right. Well, there are a couple of critical uncertainties in the midst of all of this uncertainty and volatility to keep in mind for how to think about the acceleration of technology. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that, you know, the first one I'd sort of pull out is the character of the innovations that could emerge over the next few years. You know, will the changes be disruptive? Will they be predictable? I suspect probably more disruptive than predictable, but there you go. Mm-hmm. Makes for an interesting space to be operating in. And then, of course, the other critical uncertainty is access to innovation, or the ability of organizations to make the most of any and every emerging technological innovation, as we've just been discussing here. And the real question is whether they'll find that easy or difficult. And again, if I were a betting man, I'd probably plump for difficult. But, you know.
Well, the potential threats that are going to arise based on those uncertainties, it's unclear. I would vote for you. I would bet with you about volatility and uncertainty and difficulty. But tell me why you highlighted the nature of innovation and access to innovation as the two most critical uncertainties. That's interesting.
Because these uncertainties are driven by some of the expected developments in the political, technological, and legal sectors. You know, I've touched on already things like speed of change, regulation. I haven't touched on politics yet. So, you know, in terms of the political developments, governments are probably going to be looking at how they can police the use and spread of certain potent technologies such as artificial intelligence. We've already seen that happening with things like the EU AI Act. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to see more of that. We're also having to look at what will happen with high-performance semiconductors, powerful quantum computers. You know, what's the role of government in all of that? So organizations may be forced to respect a whole pile of local restrictions on the technologies they want to use. And that's really, you know, linked to the point that I was making earlier about the way in which, if you're operating in a multinational organization, then just keeping abreast with the general thinking in different parts of the world in which you're active, you know, you shouldn't underestimate that. And then, you know, some of the technological developments that we've touched on already include artificial intelligence applications, both generative and machine learning based. And I don't know, maybe by 2026, maybe 2027, I'm not sure. I think we're going to see certainly quantum really beginning to emerge as a dominant technology. I don't think it's going to be in widespread use by that point in time. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, I suppose, about the speed at which we're going to see that. I just don't think it's going to be ready for it. But it's something that we do need to prepare for. And, you know, again, it depends where you want to sit on that whole spectrum of how quickly some of these things will come to pass. I think one of the other things, of course, is that, you know, coming back to AI, organizations are definitely looking to try to harness AI. But at the same time, the world isn't standing still. So the world is also reshaping as we're introducing AI into what we're doing. And so again, you know, I think that the challenge from the business perspective, from the security perspective, from the technology perspective, is really about how do you focus on what is important for your organization, for your people, for your customers, in a world that is constantly now changing. And the speed of that change is only going to get faster. And we haven't seen that before.
Right.
When we talk about change in the past, you know, it's, if you compare it to the speed at which things are changing now in this area, it was pretty slow. You know, AI, quantum, and, you know, everybody then trying to catch up with it. So regulators, I think, playing a much, much stronger role in the way that they're trying to. I think the light bulb has gone on for them. I think they understand that whereas traditionally they've been able to have the luxury of time to look at how things are emerging, see what impact it's had, then introduce regulation, I think they're going to have to try and get ahead of it slightly. Hmm. And that's great from the perspective of guidelines for business. Because I think if you're going to have regulation, it would be nice to have it before you've started to implement some things rather than after you have done and then need to change it. So speed, agility, technological change, these are all the sorts of things that boards, that senior leadership are all going to have to be talking about on an ongoing daily basis. And it's going to present, yes, a very challenging environment, but I think also a very, very interesting one.
Count your blessings. All of these things happening at once, outcomes could combine. Let's talk about some of the threats that can arise depending on different scenarios. What happens if we have disruptive innovation and easy access to innovation? Is that good? Is that ideal?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think that, you know, in that instance, this sort of ordinary, if I could put it that way, day-to-day operations of organizations could be upset as a steady stream of disruptive technologies are developed, deployed. But also organizations could improve their ability to handle change, which in turn would then enable them to make the most of some of those technological breakthroughs. And not all bad news, depends on how you adapt to some of these things. You know, some of these innovations that we talk about at the ISF in some of the work that we're doing at the moment, some of these innovations are available to organizations initially centered around AI, for instance, and we've talked a little bit about that, you know, machine learning, generative AI. They were disruptive, but only in the sense that they helped people accomplish many tasks more quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, this can obviously allow organizations to adapt and develop their own uses for these technologies in a very positive way. Later on, if we look at it, innovations could come from many different sources. As AI is applied to other sectors, producing, for example, different materials, applications that perhaps could eliminate some established approaches. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the things that we need to then look at within the business is if all of these things are, it's not just about creating a bit of software, an application, improving a process, because the way in which it's changing, particularly when we start to use artificial intelligence, for instance, could have far-reaching impacts on other parts of the organization that we hadn't anticipated. Mm-hmm. And large organizations, certainly the ones that have been around for a while, you know, they have evolved over a period of time. Different systems talk to others in different ways. And people should be able to relate to this fairly easily. So, you know, I'll give you an example. If Microsoft decides to update some of its operating system, there are a significant number of companies out there that suddenly have to spend an inordinate amount of time making sure that all of their systems cope, cater for some of the changes that have come about. And Microsoft does a good job. You know, it does try to test, you know, the vast majority of the more common applications. But we're not talking about common applications. We're talking about very specific, sometimes legacy-based applications. Mm-hmm. So that's just a very simple example there of the sorts of things that might happen if you're in a, you know, hypercharged, very much more speeded up environment where you're using very clever technology to, yes, provide you with something of an edge, but you probably need to try to figure out whether or not it's going to have come back to bite you in other parts of your IT real estate as well. So, and again, that's also where security can come into its own and start to help out. So I think lots of opportunity when we talk about things like, you know, disruption and innovation. It's not all bad news.
But it's not only the good guys who have access to innovation and disruption. It's, you know, we've got bad guys out there too.
Yeah, been here before, haven't we? So, but you're right, you know, threat actors also innovate. And although, you know, defenses can be developed against attacks, the sheer number and the range of the different techniques used by attackers has always really stretched existing resources, hasn't it?
Right.
Both human and technological. Automation can certainly handle some of that load. I'm very positive about that. But this in turn, you know, puts a lot more pressure on organizations to change and adapt at the same time as they're making changes to some of their basic operating models. So there's a lot to do. And it's not clear whether organizations have, I would say anyway, the financial, physical, or perhaps more importantly, human resources to meet all the demands that doing business in this kind of emerging situation requires.
What should leaders consider as they're thinking about the threats when they've got predictable innovation and easy access to that innovation? That's a different scenario. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think in that case, then technologies that organizations are, you know, deploying across their estate develop largely as expected, you know, with upgrades, improvements emerging steadily in areas such as ones we touched on: processing power, perhaps analytical depth, storage, response times, energy efficiency, ease of use. And in this scenario, while significant change does occur, certainly, it happens over a longer period of time. And organizations in that scenario could develop and bring about plans that would allow them to keep up. So slowing things down a little bit, getting a little bit of control back. Innovations, you know, this is somewhat of an ideal. You know, when they do appear, they'd be affordable. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the talent or the expertise required to put some of these breakthroughs to good use would be readily available. Competition certainly would be evident from startups looking to establish themselves in relatively new market sectors and to prove their expertise at handling some of these emerging technologies. But the financial, you know, sheer sort of heft and greater human resources available to larger organizations in this environment would certainly help them prevail in that scenario, I think. So with predictable innovation and relatively simple access to it, then organizations can keep up with the pace of change, and they have the resources to make the most of the advances in technologies and tools. But again, you know, we come back to what are some of these innovations? Well, for me, again, the main technology innovation is in the realm of AI, in terms of some of the generative tools and the deeper business process changing machine learning systems that large organizations, again, are adopting in much greater numbers. And that comes with consequences. You know, the consequences of this much broader use of AI will bring about other changes that other organizations have to accommodate. For instance, you know, as organizations commit to following certain dictates of algorithms trained on data that underlines their operations, they're going to seek to really take advantage very quickly on the insights and opportunities that are revealed to them. So again, we're not going to get, it doesn't matter which scenario we plump for,
yeah,
we're not going to get away from the fact that we're now in a world where you have to operate in a much more agile, flexible fashion than we have done in the past.
Is that the downside? Are there downsides to the scenario of predictable innovation, easy access to innovation?
You know, I think access to any form of innovation, whether you do it slowly, quickly, there are always going to be pitfalls. If the marketplace in which you're trading and operating also becomes much more digitally driven, and that's the way that it's going, of course, because then the environment, as I'm saying, is also in this constant state of flux, constant state of movement. You've got to be able to control what you can control, right? So you're in a much better position if you can control your innovations, irrespective of what's going on.
Right.
But you're never going to be able, I think, to divorce yourself completely from the market because you operate in the market. And so the speed at which the market is evolving is going to, I think, determine to a certain extent anyway, your success in managing your own innovation. So you may need to be innovating more quickly than you're comfortable, just mm-hmm. in order to try to keep up. And those are the sorts, I think, of discussions that we're going to be seeing very many more of in boardrooms over the coming years.
It's possible that we could end up with disruptive innovation that's hard to access. So tell me what happens in that case.
Yeah, well, I think in that case, you know, organizations are put in the difficult position of seeing powerful technological capabilities emerging, and for one reason or another, they can't access them, but which do subject them to a range of threats, risks, attacks that they have to counter or potentially, you know, build resilience against. And the inability to access some of these innovations could have several causes. So breakthroughs may demand technical proficiencies or expertise that organizations simply can't get access to because they're so rare. A separate factor could be cost. Some cases, it might be just prohibitively expensive to set up and operate these capabilities or nurture them because of the specialized hardware, for instance, that they demand. And finally, you know, access to these innovations could be restricted for security reasons or to protect national interest. And I would say large-scale quantum falls into that last category.
Right.
So, you know, although organizations can't harness these technologies for themselves, they will suffer the consequences of more powerful capabilities being developed and used by rivals or threat actors with the backing of foreign or even hostile powers. And organizations are going to have to develop defenses against attacks or threats that build on these inaccessible and potent technologies and find ways to mitigate their worst effects. And some will succeed and some won't.
Is it possible that there will be predictable innovation that is hard to access? I'm trying to cover all our bases here. So tell me about that possibility.
Yeah, it is possible. And in that case, you know, the pace of innovation, I think, is going to be steady enough to be predictable. But despite this, organizations simply can't adopt some of the breakthroughs or capitalize significantly on some of the gains that they might have aspired to, thanks to a variety of restrictions that limit their ability to act fast enough. You know, one of the things that immediately springs to mind for me is that restrictions could emerge from tougher or more encompassing regulatory regimes. You know, I've touched on that quite a lot in this session, from market conditions, for instance, that put access beyond the spending ability of an organization, or because of the difficulty of securing some of the talent to harness the innovation. Again, it's a particular concern for the smaller organization. The very size of an organization can also get in the way of an enterprise's ability to capitalize on some of the possibilities. You know, just having said that some of the smaller ones would find it difficult, smaller, more nimble startups, you know, they could steal some of the talent or other experts because they provide a much better working environment and so build out capabilities before larger organizations. The restrictions could also come from internal problems in an organization that limits its ability to adapt quickly enough to the ways of working that some of these new systems and technologies demand. I think, again, you know, back on my sort of hobby horse for this podcast around regulation, you know, it's likely that the expected exponential, I would say, growth in regulations governing the use of things like AI tools, we'll see these systems restricted in their scope or force organizations to change the outcomes following regulatory intervention. And already, you know, generative AI tools are subject to many internally set limits that stop them giving harmful advice or trespassing on illegal or inappropriate topics. And that's quite right. But I think we're going to see very many more instances of that. So I think that, you know, the whole way in which things are evolving is, as I said earlier, you know, going to make life a lot more tricky, but also potentially more interesting than it has been for quite a while.
You know, it can be so easy to get caught up in the technology. We've talked about trying to keep up, trying to keep access, trying to defend against threat actors who have the same technology. But ultimately, an enterprise's ability to deliver that product or service to its customers and to keep them happy, you touched on this, is really what it's all about.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And this is where it's so important to understand that, you know, security is there to really try to support business objectives. And I think, you know, we have to stay focused on that and ensure that we can explain that to people at every level of the business.
Well, let's discuss some practical ways for security professionals and organizations to move forward. What can organizations do in the immediate future?
Well, first of all, I would say you have to start by always focusing on protecting your crown jewels. Because if all else fails, at least those will ensure that your business still survives. So, you know, find out how well the protections operate around the most important assets that you've got, the most important applications, the most important processes that you rely on. Pay attention to the way that your supply chain partners also help to maintain those elements.
Right.
And, you know, I think the other thing is that we all need to do a better job of working with people to understand some of the stresses that, all of these things we've just been talking about bring to not just security staff in SOCs and the information security function, but throughout the business. Because we are seeing, you know, very many security people being put out into businesses, into the departments. We've seen the rise of things like the business information security officer and that kind of thing, which I think is the right thing to do because it gives security the right perspective on where the business is going. But then when we look at all of the different stresses that are out there, we just need to bear that in mind because you can't view this in isolation. You know, technology and people are no longer two separate entities. They right. blend together.
Right. Well, what about short to medium term answers? What do you recommend?
You know, I think businesses need to look at their internal readiness to swap out existing encryption for quantum proof alternatives. There's a little way up to go before they need to do that, but I'd be preparing now. They need to prepare and certainly socialize. And socialize, I think, is the important piece here. Policies that detail safe and compliant use of AI. I think they're also going to want to limit access to internally developed machine learning models and determine who can access some of the results they produce because it's in its infancy still. And finally, I think they're going to want to investigate their relationships with cloud providers to really understand how dependent the organization is on these suppliers and the ways different applications and processes use these services. We're not going to, I think, you know, come back from using cloud providers. I think that is definitely where we're going. But I think we have to understand far better some of the implications of a loss of data in the cloud, data being tampered with in the cloud, particularly when you're into, as we've been talking about here, you know, such a fast-moving environment.
What should companies assess in order to understand longer-term strategic impacts of emerging threats and risks?
I'd suggest that organizations engage with business teams a bit more to understand how far some of their main markets and potential opportunities are being driven by algorithmic things like trading systems or bots and that kind of thing, because that's, you know, the reality of the world in which we operate as well. So very different, I think, from some of the things we talked about in the past.
And the ISF is also recommending that businesses investigate the extent to which those legacy systems are being used and that they develop awareness of how the burden could grow from a hardware software point of view in terms of people and skills required to curate and maintain such systems. And that makes a lot of sense given our discussion earlier about companies potentially being really stuck with legacy systems.
Right. And finally, of course, we do recommend in the longest term that companies monitor activities, keep abreast of emerging risks and proactively keep track of their developments. I don't think we can move away from that. So first, you know, we recommend companies monitor external developments in quantum to gauge existing state of the art and prepare for future developments. They need to determine end-of-life arrangements for existing technologies that underpin, you know, operational technology and legacy equipment. We've talked about that quite a bit. And we also recommend that they review all the regulations governing AI in particular that the organization has got to respect. But I wouldn't restrict it to AI because I think that, you know, regulations are so fast moving now. And then finally, they do need to seek information about the skills and the expertise mix in the security function. And this is a little bit easier because they should have that under their control to uncover whether AI systems are in danger of forcing out longstanding experts. Or I would say, perhaps looking at how we can get this AI and people balance right. Because I'm not, as you know, one of those that believes that AI is going to do away with people. I think it's more about how we get the balance right in terms of what I do, what you do versus what a machine does. Mm-hmm. And more time needs to be spent, I think, on that so that we get the best from both.
Well, I really appreciate you being here and walking us through the future outlook as technology accelerates and accelerates and accelerates. So thank you for your time and some old chestnuts, old ideas, and some new ideas today. So an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it was great. I hope the listeners enjoyed it.
We'll be back with a new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss our other podcast, Dear InfoSec, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.